20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you, as always, for being here. Day two of Packers mini camps is officially gone and over with, and we are on to day three of Packers mini camp. And yes, that is actually our first takeaway from Wednesday, is that there will, in fact, be a day three of Packers mini camp. That was not a foregone conclusion. Normally, what Matt LaFleur has done in the past has taken this day three of minicamp and turned it into a team building activity, whether it be bowling or paintball or a variety of different activities. But instead, they are actually practicing in full on Thursday. It sounds like there was some other considerations that went into this. Of course, they missed a full week of OTAs, which I'm sure kind of made up for this. And he just said it was kind of important that they had this extra day of work, which I don't disagree with. But there will be no crazy team building activity on Thursday or today as you're listening to this. It will, in fact, be a full practice. So I will be there covering it again. I believe I'll be doing a live show afterwards. There's a little bit of logistical stuff, so I don't know for sure yet. I do have it scheduled, but if I have to change something, I'll let you know. But of course, I'll have you covered here tomorrow as well, breaking down everything that happened in that final mini camp practice. But that is takeaway number one. There will be a mini camp practice number three. Again, I'll cover it here for you right here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Next up is just some injuries. Two additional players did not practice on Wednesday that did practice on Tuesday. There was, remember, 10 players that did not practice on Tuesday. Those 10 were Aaron Banks, Quay Walker, Zane Anderson, Julian Hicks, Colin Oliver, John Williams, Elton Jenkins, Kalen King, Micah Robinson, and Christian Watson. So those were the 10 from Tuesday. And we should clarify here, Elton Jenkins not really injured, just holding in with a contract situation. But those were the 10 not practicing. The two additional players that did not practice on Wednesday were Rashid Walker, starting left tackle, and then Nate Hobbs, the starting corner slot, whatever you want to call him. So they had 12 players in totality. Remember, they did sign the new defensive tackle as well. So they had 90 players that were eligible to practice. 12 of them did not, so they still had 78 out of 90 players actually practicing on Wednesday. So that was your injury report. Nobody absent from practice. Again, everyone was there, but again, 12 players actually not practicing in some capacity. I was able to get an update on Quay Walker. Talked to Packers PR, and apparently Quay Walker is good to go for training camp. This is a injury issue. Nothing else noted. It's just a little bit banged up at the moment. And again, should be ready to go come training camp. So hopefully that's good news on Quay Walker. Again, not going to likely be practicing on Thursday. We'll see if we actually see him on Thursday or not. But the good news is it sounds like he's going to be good to go come training camp and hopefully can pick up where he left off a season ago, which I thought was playing some of the best football of his career. Meanwhile, the Bo Melton experiment continued, and Bo Melton continued to play both wide receiver and corner. One of the cool aspects of what Bo Melton did in practice on Wednesday, he was with the ones at wide receiver. To be clear, he was like the number five or six wide receiver, whatever, just one of six or seven guys that was rotating in, but he did get to spend time with the ones at wide receiver. He did get to spend time with the ones as a corner, which is, again, kind of crazy to think about, but he was out there with the ones at corner. He was with the number one kickoff unit. He was out with the number one kick return unit. He was with the number one punt return unit and the number one punt unit. And I just want to say one more time, and it's worth noting here, Bo Melton is not transferring from wide receiver to corner. He is practicing at wide receiver, while also practicing at corner, while also on all four of the core special teams units. Just want to clarify, or not even clarify, but state one more time. It would be a very special player if he were able to pull off number five or six wide receiver, number five or six corner, plus on all four special teams units, the primary ones, kick return, punt return, kickoff coverage, punt coverage. That, again, is arguably three different roster spots: a wide receiver five, a corner five, and a special teams player all rolled into one. if you can keep that on your active, you know, game day roster, it's almost like getting an additional two roster positions on your game day roster every single week. There's a ton of value there. Bo Melton's going to have to prove it. He's going to have to show that he can be worthy of those corner and wide receiver spots. We already know he's more than capable of being a number five or number six wide receiver. There's not really a question there. Now the question is, can he get there at corner? And of course, we know he's very capable on special teams as well. So there's still a lot of value here. But if he can stamp a cornerback designation on his resume as well, and that can be something he can give to this team, it would give him some really unique versatility and something that nobody else is going to be able to give them. So we'll see how that continues. But for the second consecutive day, Bo Melton was, in fact, practicing at corner again. And we'll kind of continue to keep an eye on that and see if that continues going into training camp. This just ends up being a mini camp experiment. But either way, just really cool. And I want to say one more time, and I even talked on the radio about this. I talked with Sparky Pfeiffer on his radio show about this. Talked to a variety of different people. This is not Jair is out, so Bo Melton is in at corner. They are, and I know I talked about this yesterday. I saw some of the comments on the little YouTube short that Tyler put out there. I would be willing to bet you almost anything, and I mean anything, if Jair was out there at practice these last couple of days, you know who else would have been at corner? Bo Melton. This is something that they brought up to him a year ago that they've been talking about and consider. We heard that from Bo Melton in his press conference or in his availability from Wednesday. That this is something that has been talked about for almost a year now. And to me, it had less to do with Jair being out. Jair was not at OTAs, right? If they were concerned, well, and they knew, trust me, they knew by OTAs that Jair Alexander was not going to be a Green Bay Packer this year. If that was the decision of, hey, Jair's gone, the solution to that is Bo Melton, they would have done it at OTAs. No correlation whatsoever. The correlation is more, they think he can do it. It adds value to him. And if you even want to get to that like desperate low corner room number, well, Micah Robinson and Kalen King being out is more of a precursor to like, hey, we need to get an extra body over there than Jair, who again was missing at OTAs and they didn't feel the need to do any of that. So to me, not correlated in any way, shape, or form. If Jair was there, Melton still would have been in that room. But Jair was not. Neither was Kalen King. Neither was Micah Robinson. They gave it a shot. I'm very interested to see how it plays out moving forward. Your starters on the day, and again, Matt LaFleur would probably rather have us not read too much into this, but we're Packers fans. Of course, we're going to read into everything because we take every morsel very seriously. And it's just fun to talk about and discuss, right? So Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft at tight end, three wide receiver set, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, and Dontavian Wicks, Jordan Morgan at left tackle, Donovan Jennings at left guard, Jacob Monk at center, Sean Ryan at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle. LVN was your left defensive end. He may have been right. I didn't write down who was on what side, but LVN and Rashawn Gary were your defensive ends. Devontae White and Kenny Clark were your defensive tackles. Cooper and McDuffie were at linebacker. Nixon and Valentine at outside corner. Bullard in the slot. And then Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney at safety. I did take a look for a little bit and had the opportunity to go and watch a little bit of the number twos practicing just to see if like anything stood out, right? Was there a player playing a position that maybe we wouldn't have expected? Maybe a defensive end dabbling at defensive tackle, anything that stood out like that way, right? And this was kind of through like the walkthrough portion. So there wasn't going to be any sort of dynamic big plays that I was going to be able to report on or anything like that. But there were two things that stood out. When I went over there, Anthony Belton was working at left tackle. Everything I've seen from Belton so far has been left tackle and right tackle. That easily at this point in time could be, hey, let's get his feet wet at a position he feels comfortable with. He's played primarily tackle. We don't need to move him at guard at this point. Let's get him something he's a bit more familiar with. So it seems like they are focusing him at tackle first. And then, you know, we'll see down the road if he expands in his versatility. We've heard that they think he can play four different positions along the line, but thus far seems to be left tackle and right tackle that they are focusing him in on. And again, we'll see if that changes in camp. The other one is Jonathan Baldwin. Jonathan Baldwin was brought in and is listed on the roster as a corner. If you look at the Dane Brugler draft guide, which I got over on my bookshelf over there, most people, when you look at the scouting report for Jonathan Baldwin coming out of college, expected him to be a safety. Brugler had him listed as a safety. I'm almost positive NFL.com had him listed as a safety. But when Green Bay picked him up, they announced him as a corner. Now, even as a corner, it would have been an expectation that he would be a slot corner only, not really an outside corner, but just probably a slot corner. And so maybe from a Packers standpoint, even if they see him as a slot corner, it may make more sense to kind of go the Javon Bullard route, where you kind of train him as a safety slash, you know, slot guy rather than a outside corner slot guy. But what I saw is that Jonathan Baldwin was in fact lined up at safety and not a corner. Could that change over time? Sure. But it looks like he may be more safety than corner at this point in time. All right. The big sort of takeaways from the practice were the two-minute drills. There was some individual stuff, and then we got into a little bit of 7-on-7s and some walkthrough type stuff. Most of it was pretty nondescript, and then you got to the 2-minute drills, both for the twos and the ones, and those were a lot more fun. So let's get into it right away. Here was the 2-minute drill situation. In this particular setup, the offense was down by 2 points. There was exactly 2 minutes remaining. The ball was on their own 20-yard line. It was first and 10, and they had one timeout to work with. So again, 2 minutes left, down by two, ball on their own 20, first and 10, one timeout. So number two's got the ball first. Malik Willis threw over the middle to Sam Brown Jr., and it was incomplete. It looked like it was behind Sam Brown Jr., but that's one of those ones where maybe he was expecting Sam Brown Jr. to sit down, and Sam Brown Jr. just kept running. It just looked like maybe they were a little bit off, cadence or rhythm and weren't on the same page. And that ultimately ended up in an incompletion. Tough to say whether or not that was on Sam Brown or whether that was a miss by Malik Willis, but either way, fell incomplete. Next play, Willis threw it to Cornelius Johnson for a 7-yard gain. Clock continued to run. Then Willis incomplete along the sidelines. I couldn't tell who he was throwing to on that play, but it was in fact incomplete. And then you came to a key fourth down. And who did he go to? Cornelius Johnson. Cornelius Johnson picks up the first down, keeps the drive alive. Then there was some penalty that happened. No matter what way you slice it, it doesn't make a ton of sense. The reason being is that it looked like they gave there would have been some sort of procedural penalty, like a false start. But they gave him a 10-yard penalty and also had the clock run. And so they called the timeout there, or either took the 10-second runoff. I'm not sure. But it was they ran the clock plus gave a 10-yard penalty. It was a weird situation. But either way, it ended up in a first and 20. And on that play, Malik Willis goes back to pass. Cornelius Johnson goes up along the sidelines in between, I think it was Oladapo, and I forget who the corner was, but kind of in that cover two, that hole. And I don't know if it may not have even been like a cover two hole. Maybe it was Oladapo coming from single high, but there's a little gap between the corner and the safety. And Willis put it on a absolute rope. It was a dime. It was a beautiful throw. And Cornelius Johnson had easily got open. And he was open, caught it along the sidelines. I can't recall if he got out of bounds or not, if they had to, work with a running clock. But either way, huge play from Malik Willis to Cornelius Johnson. The next play was a really interesting play call. They were probably at like the 35-yard line or something. They handed it off to Amar Johnson, and Amar Johnson got 1 yard. Now the clock's ticking. They're out of timeouts. And like now you have to kind of go a little bit more up-tempo again. It was probably a very bad play call on first down. Now, I'm not criticizing play calling in practice. Like there's certain things that maybe they wanted to get a look at or that they're actually practicing. So again, I'm not criticizing play calling on a 2-minute drill in practice, but that was an interesting one nonetheless. And then, so you had to come back and you had to kind of get some yards here to make this a reasonable field goal. And Malik Willis looks who else's way. Cornelius Johnson picks up a first down. They let the clock run down to 3 seconds. Spike for Malik Willis. Alex Hale comes on for a 37-yard game winner, crushes it, and the offense wins that particular drill. So two players really stood out. Malik Willis, who we'll talk about more in just a little bit, but Cornelius Johnson as well. It's a very interesting player, 90th percentile athlete at wide receiver, actually a little bit above that. He is a very intriguing player when you watch him play, and certainly when you have a 2-minute drill like that, where he's picking up 4 different catches on 1 2-minute drive. But he's got some good size. He's got some good speed. Interesting player. Played at Michigan with J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings quarterback in their national championship run. Was a 7th-round pick by the Chargers and his college coach, Jim Harbaugh. They did not keep him for very long. Ended up in Green Bay. And now we'll see if he can kind of make his way into the receiver conversation, or more likely into that practice squad wide receiver conversation. But very good day for Cornelius Johnson, and a nice drive from Malik Willis as well. We'll be right back. So after the twos were done, the ones come on, and it's the same situation again. 2 minutes left, down by two, ball on their own 20, first and 10, one timeout. Very first play, Jordan Love hits Romeo Doubs for 7 yards. Then he goes to Doubs again along the sidelines. Keyshawn Nixon in coverage. Looks like great coverage at first glance, but the referee said no, no, no. Coverage was a little bit too good. Called the penalty on Keyshawn Nixon. It's probably only like a 7 yard penalty on the play, but 7 yards, automatic first down. And the Packers get, I don't know if it's a break or whatever, at least the offensive Packers pick up the first down on the penalty on Nixon. On the very next play, the Packers defense and Jeff Hafley sends Xavier McKinney off the edge, and McKinney comes untouched. And they call it a sack on Jordan. Now, this is the first controversial one, because I think Jordan and the offense would tell you that Jordan would have been able to get the ball off on time. I think it was just an incomplete pass, but it certainly would have been much better than a sack. Instead, they rule it a sack. It is a 10-yard sack where you're now second and 20, and the clock runs, and it ends up being a huge detrimental play for the offense and a big play for Xavier McKinney. Next play, Jordan Love tries to hit something on the outside to the left, and Carrington Valentine reads it. He jumps it. Carrington said he should have had it. And I think Bill Huber wrote as well that he thought maybe Valentine should have had it. When I first saw it, the way that Valentine got up, I thought it looked like he was able to get an outstretched hand on it, but it was more of a pass breakup opportunity than an interception opportunity. And he did a great job of breaking it up. At first glance, did not count it as a, you know, turnover worthy play or an interceptable pass by Jordan. We don't have the benefit of all 22 or instant replay when it comes to this stuff. So you can only go based off of what we saw in real time. I didn't think it was an interceptable pass. Valentine thought it was. I think Bill Huber thought it might've been as well, but you know, go with what you will. If it was an interceptable pass, it would have been the first one of OTAs or minicamp so far. If it would have been picked, it would have been a pretty spectacular play by Carrington Valentine to pick off that throw. Either way, it's a great play by Valentine to jump it, break it up, and see now third and 20. They go short left on third and 20, probably like a little wide receiver bubble or something, and the receiver did the wrong thing, or they were just not on the same page. Jordan threw it short. The receiver was going downfield, and it ends up incomplete and bringing up a fourth and 20. This is going to be the last play of practice. We didn't know it, I guess, at the time, but fourth and 20, and you're just thinking, all right, disappointing day for the offense in the number two drill, or sorry, in the number one drills, and Jordan really not being able to get the team down the field at all. There was, again, the controversial sack by Xavier McKinney, but it was a little bit disappointing. And then fourth and 20, Jordan drops back to pass. You can check this out over on the Packers Twitter account. Can you believe it? They actually posted a highlight from practice in a team activity, completely unheard of. But Jordan rears back to throw, hits Mecole Hardman 50 plus yards down the field. Hardman takes it the rest of the way. It's a 74 yard touchdown from Jordan Love to Mecole Hardman. Play of probably OTAs and minicamps. Just a unreal throw. Fantastic read. A great read by Mecole Hardman to see that the corner was flat footed and had just run past them. They were bringing a safety pressure on the play. This is the controversial one, number two. The Packers defense swears that they would have got there and that it should have been a sack of Jordan. And the Packers offense clearly felt opposite. They gave him the play, and rightfully so. It was an unbelievable throw by Jordan. Could not have handed it to Mecole Hardman any better than what he did. And just a really cool moment to end practice. So big time 74-yard touchdown pass from Jordan Love to Mecole Hardman, the majority of it through the air. And again, as much of a beautiful aesthetically pleasing play as you could possibly hope for in a mini camp practice. So those are your 2 minute drills. And let's kind of talk about Jordan Love off of that. Matt LaFleur was asked how Jordan Love's offseason has gone so far. And Matt LaFleur said, quote, "It's as good as it could have been." I totally agree. I've been so impressed by what I've seen from Jordan so far. I can't stress it enough. Total control of the offense, big time veteran presence, leader, calm, cool, collected, everything that you want to see. And then hitting all areas of the field, short, intermediate, and deep, coming up with big throws when he has to have them, including the 2-minute drill today. Yes, it's OTAs and minicamp. I get it. I am not crowning anyone. I'm not saying he's the next great quarterback or anything like that. I'm saying that for what he could have done through OTAs and minicamp so far, could not have asked for much more than what Jordan Love has given the Packers in these practices. And I think you should be excited overall with where he's at. If this was the opposite, if Jordan was throwing picks every day, looked disjointed, didn't look comfortable in the offense, can you imagine the talking points that would be out there, right or wrong? And we'd probably be saying, hey, it's just practice. We don't know what they're working on. That's when Jordan Love's supposed to take some chances and things like that. Maybe people would be trying to justify it. Other people would be trying to drag Jordan under the bus and say, see, I told you so. He's not the guy. So if it were the opposite, a lot of people would be talking about it. And again, I take everything with a grain of salt this period of time, whether it's good or bad. But for me, I've loved what I've seen from Jordan so far. And it's stuff that's like not, it's not irrelevant stuff. Meaning it's one thing if just like, you know, the arm was looking good or something like that. But his ability to read defenses, his ability to get the team lined up and into the checks and the audibles and anything that he needs to do, it's just been a very big veteran presence at QB, one that's very welcome. And I'm very excited about what Jordan can do just based off of what we've seen in OTAs and mini camps so far. So love Jordan and his performance. And again, huge throw to end. And it just, again, could not be a better place ball to Mecole Hardman than that. Mecole Hardman, meanwhile, for back-to-back days, you know, game-winning or game-tying touchdowns at the end of practice. Yesterday, or I should say Tuesday as you're listening to this, mini Hail Mary from Sean Clifford to Mecole Hardman on the very last play of the game to, in that scenario, tie the game. I mean, just awesome play by Mecole Hardman. Not the biggest guy in the world. He goes up and gets it one-handed, comes down with a touchdown. One day later, working with the ones, the threes he was working with Sean Clifford the other day, this time he gets to work with the ones. Jordan's out there and he uncorks one, and Hardman did a great job of running underneath it, running with it after the catch, sprinting away from everyone with that 4.240 speed and coming up with a, in this case, game-winning touchdown. Two huge plays in back-to-back days for Mecole Hardman. So fun. You know, fun couple of days from him, and you know, kind of a great way to segue into this number six wide receiver battle. I talked about it a lot yesterday, so I don't necessarily need to do it again, but I'm just so excited about these three wide receivers potentially fighting for one spot. I think all three of them are worthy of 53-man roster spots. Mecole Hardman's looked really good so far. Veteran presence, oldest guy in the locker room at wide receiver, and he looks like he's ready to go out there and play right now. He's got a veteran presence again already and just kind of knows what this offense is trying to accomplish, has had some big time moments with KC, including a, you know, Super Bowl hero moment. And I do think he brings something into this room. Also has some real punt return ability as well. So he's going to be battling. Malik Heath, great wide receiver. Well, okay. He's been a really good wide receiver when given the opportunity and is a really good run blocker on the outside. And, you know, not in Wednesday's practice, but in Tuesday's practice, had a couple really big catches in the 2-minute drills as well. So he continues to perform. And then, of course, we talked about Bo Melton, all four core special teams units, plus playing defense, plus playing offense, big time Swiss Army knife energy. And I think that that group of three wide receivers battling it out for potentially one roster spot is going to be a very, very fun battle to keep an eye on as we go through camp and preseason and family night and everything like that. Your punt returners for the day were Keyshawn Nixon, Mecole Hardman, Jaden Reed, and Romeo Doubs. And then there's just a few other things that I wanted to get through really quick. The first is Malik Willis. We did talk to, about him, obviously, in the 2-minute drill, and we talked about him a little bit yesterday as well. But I want to see if I can pull this up really quick from Wes Hodkiewicz of his exact wording of what he tweeted out, because I think it was perfect with what he said. He said, quote, "The more I watch Malik Willis, the less I understand how the Packers managed to get him for a late seventh. Effortless throwing motion, just put it on the money to Fitzpatrick on a post route." Malik Willis has looked really good so far. Now, Let me just stop you sickos right there. No, we're not talking about in Jordan Love territory or that he should be competing with Jordan or Jordan's in. No, settle down, settle down. So we're not going that far. But what I will say is that last year, Green Bay trades that aforementioned seventh round pick for Malik Willis right before the start of the season. Gets thrown into the fray at the end of that game in Philly or in Brazil against Philly in week one because of Jordan's injury. Starts weeks two and three. And then, of course, had to just get a crash course into Matt LaFleur's offense, or more appropriately would say built a crash course offense for Malik Willis that he was able to run. And he ran it great. He made some big time throws when he needed to, was dynamic, was everything that they needed him to be, especially on such unbelievably short notice. But he didn't have that offseason or really even that opportunity to get fully entrenched and ingrained in a Matt LaFleur offense. Hello, 2025 offseason. Malik Willis has now had the opportunity to learn this offense, to understand it. I'm not saying he has like a, you know, 10-year veteran, you know, presence of the offense or anything like that, but he certainly has the ability now to run this offense the way that it is sort of designed and that Matt LaFleur has put it together. It's not that, hey, Malik's in there, so we got to do a bunch of different stuff. I'm sure if Malik would take over for any period of time, Matt would still work a lot of that stuff in, but he can run this offense as is. And you take a very talented player who's got great athleticism, just easy, easy gas as a thrower when he's putting the ball out there. And just again, a natural throwing motion. Plus now he's entrenched in the offense even more and knows what he's doing in it. And you can see the difference. And he just, again, I think he's one of the best backup quarterbacks right now in football. I think he does have the ability to be maybe, you know, a bottom of the league starter at some point. We'll see if he gets any opportunities coming up next year. But I've liked what I've seen from Malik Willis so far. Green Bay, I think, is very not lucky because they earned this in the trade that they were able to find him for a seventh round pick. What an absolute steal by Green Bay. And again, I like even more what I'm seeing out of Malik Willis now that he is much more familiar with Matt LaFleur's offense and how to run it. And it's, I don't know if I want to say entirety, but he looks comfortable doing just about everything. We'll be right back. Last but not least, just a couple other things. Luke Musgrave. Musgrave, I think, has had a really nice OTA and minicamp so far. Talked about this a little bit on our you know, Q&A and immediate reaction to minicamp yesterday. But in his first couple seasons, I talked about Musgrave, who is this very fast, tall, athletic tight end, right? But I've talked about in the past how I almost think he needs to slow down. Not necessarily from like a speed standpoint, but just slow down his mind, calm down, and not try to run a million miles per hour when he gets the ball and just play within himself. And by doing that, those raw natural gifts will take over. And in year three, it seems like he is much more comfortable playing within himself and those raw natural gifts are taking over. He looks faster because he's on balance. He's not trying to do too much. He's not hurrying. That was the difference. In his first couple seasons, he was fast, but he was hurrying. Now he's just fast. And that is a huge difference. And all of those stumbles and just looking maybe a little bit less coordinated at times, that seems to have gone away. And I think you're starting to see the Luke Musgrave that I think Green Bay was hoping that they were going to get when they spent a second round pick on him, which I love that pick at the time. I still think there's a lot of talent in Luke Musgrave, but he seems to, for the first time, really be unlocking that a little bit more. And I think it's because he's playing more within himself and now allowing those great speed, you know, gifts and everything else to kind of take over. I'm liking what I've seen out of Luke Musgrave thus far in OTAs and minicamps. The big thing is, can he stay on the field and can he, you know, carry it over into training camp? And then, of course, more importantly, the regular season. And then last but not least, not to necessarily end on a bad note, but in the individual drills, just kind of wide receivers against air and running backs and tight ends against air, quarterbacks throwing the ball, and there were eight different drops throughout the course of just the individuals on air, you know, quarterbacks throwing to, again, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. I don't think there was any repeat offender. No, I don't think Dontavian Wicks was one of the players who had a drop, but it was just like I'm watching this and I'm like, guys, just catch the ball. So some more Jugs machine work needed for apparently the entirety of the offense, because there were more drops than you would have liked to have seen, couple during the course of practice after that as well. So definitely a noteworthy topic for the day, something that they need to continue to clean up, but drops remain a little bit of an issue, and hopefully they do not remain an issue come regular season the way that they were a season ago. That is going to do it for me today. Again, just kind of recapping some of our topics from today. New injuries, Rashid Walker and Nate Hobbs. There will be a mini camp day 3 tomorrow. Quay Walker is fighting injury, but should be back for training camp. Does not seem to be a contract situation. Bo Melton was everywhere, offense, defense, and all four core special teams units. Your starters were Love, Jacobs, Kraft, Dobbs, Reed, Wicks, Morgan, Jennings, Monk, Ryan, Tom, LVN, Wyatt, Clark, Gary, Cooper, McDuffie, Nixon, Bullard, Valentine, Williams, and Xavier McKinney. Jonathan Baldwin seems to be a safety, not a corner. Anthony Belton's working at tackle. The two-minute drills were pretty epic with Malik Willis driving the team down with Cornelius Johnson, picking up a game-winning field goal, and of course, Jordan Love to Mecole Hardman for a 74-yard bomb for the win with the ones. Jordan Love has been off to a great start at OTAs and minicamps. Matt LaFleur echoed that, saying it's as good as it could have been so far. Mecole Hardman, two straight days with game-tying or game-winning touchdowns, one on a mini Hail Mary from Sean Clifford on Tuesday, and then a 74-yard bomb on 4th and 20 from Jordan Love on Wednesday. The number 6 wide receiver battle remains very, very fun. Punt returners were Nixon, Hardman, Reed, and Dobbs. Malik Willis looks great as he continues to learn more and more about Matt LaFleur's offense and how to operate it. Luke Musgrave looks like he's playing under much better control, not trying to do too much, and drops remain a bit of an issue. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be right back here tomorrow. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carl Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, Go Pack Go.